Welcome to the fourth annual This Is Money Christmas Taste Test in partnership with NS&I. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lambert and I today is Consumer Affairs editor Lee Boyce. The duo are here to discuss and digest, with any luck, some choice festive fare alongside a pick of the week's top money stories. So today we'll pore over house prices and Prosecco from Waitrose, dig into accidental landlords and Sainsbury's mince pies, and turn our noses up at Lidl's Brussels sprouts, though not me, and still having to pay insurance if your car's written off. But while, of course, this is a bit of unscientific seasonal fun, the price of our Christmas food shop is no laughing matter. It's spiralled this year thanks to the biggest growth in food inflation in 4 years. With unemployment, though, at record lows, wages rising and no change in the interest rates, have we reached peak squeeze? Well, let's find out. All that coming up. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, making saving that little bit more exciting.
But before we tuck into my least favourite subject, house prices, just a word about the taste test. Now, as I said, it's into its fourth year. We have, as always, representation from the German discounters, your mid-range and higher-end stores. This year, by geographical default, we have Lidl, Sainsbury's and Waitrose. Now, you'll notice the first of the big changes to last year, previous winners Tesco, they are out. For no other reason than I don't live near one. But to be honest, they've done too well in the last couple of years. It's a chance for someone else to shine. And the second big change, you will be so disappointed to hear, gentlemen. The turkey, techie ham, something, whatever it was, has gone. It is out. No more. This is a vegetarian offering. You will try Prosecco for mains, sprouts, parsnips and stuffing. Then Lee's favourite mince pies. And to finish, we have a cheese course with cheddar, blue cheese and chutney. Only I know where each is from. So Simon and Lee, you have a score sheet in front of you where you can put your winner, W, and your loser, L, next to each foodstuff. And at the end, we tot up the winners and the losers. And I can tell you there is a clear distinction on price, as you would expect. So the German discounter is by far the cheapest, the mid-range, the middle, and Waitrose the most expensive. So firstly, Prosecco. A very warm welcome to you both. I did search out for the hangover-free stuff that Lidl sold, but it's sold out, so sadly you will probably have a hangover in this. But the price here is very similar across the board, actually. £7.99 for Lidl, £10 for Sainsbury's, although lots of offers on £7.50, £10.99 for Waitrose, again on offer for £7.99. Now, normally in years gone by, we've spoken at length, haven't we, about the state of the supermarkets. But this year, and could I be a little bit wrong, Hilly, it just seemed a little bit more subdued. So just briefly reflect on the year on supermarket retail before we get into food inflation and the like. So how have the supermarkets fared, especially post-Brexit? Because last year's taste test, we were talking about the price war. Has that continued? While Simon cracks on with the Prosecco. Lee?
Well, a very Merry Christmas, Georgie.
Merry Christmas.
I'm in the festive spirit now that I'm in the studio and we're doing our Christmas taste test. It means the official start of Christmas, of course. Now, you're right. We haven't spoken that much about the supermarkets as we have in previous years this year. And actually, they've been chugging it away quite nicely. But the supermarket price battle has eased off quite a bit. So we had something like 30 consecutive periods of prices falling. So the price of your shop has fallen since 2013. This is according to Kantar World Panel, who do this influential sort of monthly report on the state of the supermarkets. But this year, actually, it's been chugging higher. And it's now actually at its highest level since 2013. So prices of your shop have gone up 3.6%. And what that has meant for the supermarkets is that sales are actually the till roll. What people are spending in the supermarkets is nudging higher, just sheerly because the shop has got more expensive. And in terms of the state of the supermarkets and how they're doing, well, Tesco is still by far the most visited supermarket. It's got the highest market share. I can't believe you don't live near one. You must be the only person in Britain, Georgie, that doesn't live within a 5 to 10 minute walk of a Tesco.
It's only Waitrose down my way, darling.
But yeah, it's still way ahead. But of course, and we've spoken about this for quite a number of years now, the German discounters really are hot on the heels of some of the sort of smaller ones than Tesco. So Aldi market share is almost 7%, and Morrison's is 10.3%. So it's really closing the gap on Morrisons. And then if you factor in Lidl as well, you're talking more like a 12% market share. It's pretty big. And they're predicting by 2020, the two supermarkets, Aldi and Lidl, will actually have combined a 20% market share. So one in five shoppers will go to an Aldi or Lidl. So that is the battle for the big four. So your Tesco, Sainsbury's, Morrisons and Asda, they're having to kind of compete with the discounters. And also they're competing with the high-end retailers such as Waitrose and M&S. And I think our shopping habits are changing quite a lot. So I think people flit in and out of the supermarkets. They don't necessarily need to pick one now. They might go to a certain supermarket for certain products that they think is better quality and then do like a top-up shop somewhere else. A lot of us, you know, live in more urban areas where we might go into sort of more local little stores and pick up as we go along and don't do a big monthly shop. And these are all things that supermarkets are having to sort of deal with. But this Christmas, I think, has been brilliant for innovation at supermarkets and some of the strange products that are on offer that you can get. And it's almost like I saw like a Prosecco infused turkey, for example, on sale. But that sort of thing is enticing shoppers to try something different.
Yeah.
And there's this big trend now, for example, where I met Sainsbury's chief exec yesterday, and he was saying this big drive now that the Christmas brunch, so the brunch you have before your Christmas dinner, it's becoming as popular as a Christmas dinner.
People are splashing
out for a Christmas brunch, which I thought was quite fascinating. People are now making as much of an event over that as they are dinner. Yeah. And also the other thing that's really propping up the supermarkets, really, you might think, well, really, but gin. Gin sales have gone absolutely through the roof, and they're saying that £1 billion would have been spent on gin this year. They're predicting within 2 years that's going to double to £2 billion. For gin. And one final thing, the price of salmon has gone up massively.
Talking of Christmas brunch?
We're talking of Christmas brunch. It's actually the popular trend is to have smoked salmon and eggs benedict for breakfast. This is apparently the new Christmas turkey. You have your turkey for lunch and you have your salmon for breakfast, apparently. But the price of salmon has actually gone up something like 25% in the last couple of years.
22.9% well, there we between go. November 2015 and 2016.
Okay, it's all down to Brexit. No, it's not. it's basically, it's a supply and demand issue because more people are buying it and seeing it as a kind of fancy thing to have, you know, all year round. But also there's been quite a lot of disease and problems with manufacturing salmon. It's actually quite a complicated process to have a salmon farm that's successful and doesn't suffer from those sort of problems. So there's so many interesting factors in the supermarket, and we'll no doubt be speaking about more in the new year.
Yes, we will indeed. So Lee, while you crack on with the Prosecco, Simon, Lee gave us lots to think about there, just anecdotally, and I'll be totally honest, it's very unscientific of me, but I have to say I did notice that in previous years, certainly Tesco was starting to become quite competitively priced with the discounters. And I haven't done Tesco this year, I've done Sainsbury's, but actually what I've noticed is that Waitrose are pulling its prices down a little bit more to match with Sainsbury's, certainly on some products. But Simon, what do you think is going to be the big thing we're talking about next year? What will be the big story there next year?
Well, I think that we're seeing this food inflation at the moment. Quite a bit of that is due to the drop in the pound. We're probably seeing that peak round about now, because whilst the pound fell a lot immediately after the Brexit vote and has then sort of found a level more or less through this year, retailers tried to avoid passing on the price rises for as long as possible. But now they are starting to filter through. So if the pound stays where it is now, then that inflation should fall away. If the pound takes another tumble, then we'll see more of that inflation. And I think that will be the big story, is what happens with inflation. Does it drift off, as the Bank of England has suggested, from the 3.1% that it was revealed to have hit this week? Or does it actually remain stubborn and perhaps even go up? Because if it remains stubborn and goes up, then we've got a bit of a problem, because then you start to get the interest rate question. One thing that is interesting about the supermarkets is, I was just having a look at the share price just now while you and Lee were talking, and the two big listed supermarkets in the UK are Tesco and Sainsbury's. Now, we've been talking about the travails of the supermarket industry for a number of years now. And basically, since about August, September 2014, so more than 3 years ago, their share prices have really gone nowhere. They've bounced up and down over that period. For example, Sainsbury's at the moment is about 2, 3, 5p. It's been down to 220. It's been up to 290. Tesco is about £2.05. That's been down to £1.40. There was some really bad news about Tesco, as far up as £2.50. But actually, if you go back over that 3-year period, they were round about that level 3 years ago, and they're round about that level now. So if you're an investor, you've not really seen much benefit from them. Sainsbury's is still paying a dividend. Tesco had to cut its dividend. Sainsbury's is paying less of a dividend than it was. But what's interesting, actually, if you look at the shares, is that Tesco shares, if you measure them on this price to earnings ratio, are much more expensive than Sainsbury's shares. Sainsbury's shares are on a price to earnings ratio of 10. Tesco's are on a price to earnings ratio of 30. And that is largely because that measure is backward looking, and Tesco has had to write off so much money, which has really pushed down its profits. So I think the interesting thing with these two supermarkets is, are you going to see the P element, the price element of that, move up because the E element's going to come back, the earnings? Are they going to start making more money, or are they going to keep finding that the German discounters are eating their lunch, stealing their dinner, and all those other things?
We shall see. Okie dokie then. Has everybody had a chance to try the Prosecco in
yes.
front of you? It's like a beaker of Prosecco. I'm sorry, I couldn't get flutes. I'm not to be trusted. Lee, please, can I have your winner? They are 1, 2, and 3. I would like to remind the listeners that Lee and Simon do not know where each of them from. I do. Lee, firstly, what is your winner?
Firstly, can I say, Georgie, thanks for getting glasses.
Yeah,
it makes such a difference not having them in plastic. And secondly, my favourite, Essex Champagne, a.k.a. Prosecco, was number one.
Number one.
My least favourite, number three.
Why number one, Lee?
Not too sweet, and it wasn't too dry. I found number three a little bit dry on the palate. Wasn't that fond of the aftertaste.
I agree. I think number one is the better one. I think it's fairly sort of light and crisp. Mm. I'm not a huge fan of Prosecco, if I'm going to be entirely honest. The loser is number two, in my mind. Tastes a bit winey.
Okay, all right.
It's got a bit of a white wine.
Official.
Glass of white wine taste to it. Not a Prosecco or a sparkling kind of taste to it. Three was okay, fairly crisp, but it had a bit of a flat aftertaste.
Mm. Right, okay. I would like to point out, though, that probably tastes a bit better than whatever you were drinking out of beakers at the darts last night, or
oh,
no?
I don't know about
Did you get
that.
Pine glasses there?
No, there's something about having a big jug of Foster's, a warm jug of Foster's at the darts. You don't mind it when it's warm and you're watching the darts, because it's the darts, and the darts is awesome.
I mean, the one thing I will say for drinking large quantities of Foster's at the darts is that you don't end up with the kind of hangover you get from drinking craft ales down the pub. So, I mean, there is a benefit.
There is only that benefit, I can imagine, to doing it. Okay, we got inflation figures out this week. We spoke about food inflation, but generally up a smidge to 3.1%. It means the governor of the Bank of England has to sharpen his quill, write a letter to the Chancellor explaining why he's missed his 2% target. However, most commentators believe it has reached its peak. We also got some good employment and wage figures, no change in the base rate, but the bank also said that different economic indicators suggest that growth was likely to have slowed down as the year ends. So, Simon, the state of the nation, if you would, as we taste and Lee get involved with the Brussels and parsnips and the stuffing as well. Just a little note about the price here. Actually, Waitrose was cheaper than Sainsbury's. I've done all the maths and made sure it's all even in terms of the weight. So Brussels sprouts and parsnips all together from Lidl, 58p. From Sainsbury's, £2.43. From Waitrose, £1.85. So enjoy those, Lee. Simon, if you would do a rundown of the state of the nation.
Well, the inflation figure rose unexpectedly this week to 3.1%. That's the figure for November. It was expected to have actually peaked, or perhaps already, the Bank of England had said, or at least at worst it was going to stay the same. The fact that it ticked up by a very, very small 0.1% to 3.1% is hardly a huge amount, but it's bad news for the Bank of England because it thought it had peaked. And it's bad news for people because weekly wages are growing at just 2.2%. So we're losing money, essentially. Now, the question is, what does the Bank of England do here? Because you've also got unemployment at record low levels. And we raised interest rates last month from 0.25% to 0.5%, first rise in a decade. But the Bank of England is very reluctant to continue to raise interest rates. Normally, at a time when you saw high inflation, you would continue to raise interest rates to try and rein in the high inflation. But we've got the problem of that low wage growth. And then also, we've got the problem of Brexit, which it doesn't want to starve off the oxygen to the economy too much whilst we're still negotiating Brexit. And who knows what those negotiations are going to bring out. So it's playing it cautious at a time when you might expect it to play a stronger hand. And when they raised rates last month on the podcast, I outlined the sort of the good, the bad and the awkward scenarios. And the good scenario is actually that the economy does better than we think. People's wages start to go up. And actually, in that instance, the Bank of England can keep raising interest rates because things are going well. The bad, people's wages don't go up. Inflation, you know, drops off, but still is higher than wages. Brexit negotiations don't go well. We start to see growth slowing. Then it's got a problem. So what do we do? Do we cut interest rates again? The awkward is if this inflation doesn't just stay stubbornly high, doesn't go down, it goes up. You know, what happens if inflation hits 4% and starts sticking around there? What happens if the pound takes another tumble and all of a sudden you see that filter through? Because that's going to weigh down heavily, because you're probably not going to see people's wages go up. That's going to weigh down heavily on the consumer. You've already got lots of debts. You're seeing house prices still grow at the moment, but slow down a bit. We start to get stuck in this slightly tricky scenario. I'm going to go glass half full. And I'm going to say that actually, I think next year will probably be better than people expect. However, I was listening to someone the other day talking about how there's a sort of element of, because things didn't go bad immediately after the Brexit vote, we've just decided that everything will probably be okay now. And because it's turning into such a pain to negotiate, we've just decided to do the old Monty Python thing and always look on the bright side of life. And whilst that is
very British,
an admirable trait, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to be okay.
No, but
we might just be burying our heads in the sand, I think, is what the person was trying to get at.
Too early to say that the squeeze on households will definitely ease. Your glass is half full, hopefully, by the end of it, when you've had three large glasses of Prosecco. It'll be even fuller. I have to say, Simon, I'm really looking forward to listening back as Simon tucks into the Brussels, the parsnips and the stuffing. I'm really looking forward to listening back to the show because it was very hard to concentrate on what you were actually saying there. Because, Lee, you are so comedy when you're trying things out. I'd like to point out that, thank goodness this is radio, because you were throwing Brussels into the air, trying to get them into your mouth and missing. So, Lee, you've been trying the Brussels, no pun intended, with Brexit. Tell me, what do you like? What do you not like? I did try and heat them up, but they're probably soggy a bit now.
I'm going to say, Georgie, you've done a stellar job this
year.
Thanks. Yeah, honestly, your cooking skills have gone up a notch. They've really gone up a notch. And there is some sort of joke to be made, between the Brussels and Brexit, of course, but we won't go down that route because this is a serious show.
Yeah.
So on the Brussels sprout front, I've actually, in the last couple of years, decided I do like Brussels sprouts. It's taken me a little while to...
They're amazing, aren't they?
They've gotten nicer. And actually, there is science behind it. And we might have mentioned this before.
But I did,
They've been made to be sweeter now. So they kind of get rid of the bitter sort of seeds and things. And they've been slowly sort of getting the sweeter and sweeter. And
because
it's changed.
Carry a gene within us that likes or doesn't like the bitterness of it. So
exactly.
If they make it sweeter, more people like
it. Exactly. And that's exactly what's happened. And these were a very, very nice... selection of sprouts, I must say. And my winner was number two.
Number two.
And the tasting notes I've put here is that the number two was sweet and nutty. A really good flavour, good balance of that sprout. I liked it. Number three actually was the most bitter, so that's the loser. I don't
Our
like
winner
my sprout.
Was the same, by the way, Lee, and I agreed exactly with what you said.
Yeah, I'm just not too... It was just a little bit too bitter, so they've obviously still got the bitter sprout gene that they haven't got rid of, whoever that is.
Either naughty. Way, I'll just cook that badly.
Parsnips.
Yeah.
The battens of gold. I love a parsnip. Parsnip might be definitely in my top three vegetable. It's a beautiful thing when cooked properly with a bit of honey and some pepper. And I could eat them just for every meal. I think they're great. So my winner is number three on this one. And the tasting note I've put on that is it had a slightly smoky taste, which I quite liked. It was nice on the palate. And I've gone number two for the worst. It was a bit bland.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there wasn't really much to it. And that's a real tragic thing for a parsnip when it's bland.
The smoky taste, probably as I was using a gas oven for the first time and it set off the fire alarm. So,
okay.
That might have had
quite possibly. I mean,
to do with it.
To be honest with you, they're all very good quality parsnips. And
fantastic.
You know, they're a great vegetable, as I say. Versatile. You know, I could work for the Department of Parsnips and really sort of get them out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I won't. And for the stuffing, I love stuffing as well. Stuffing is just, it's the best. I just
I've never had so enthusiastic at a taste test.
Well, do you know what? I think it's Christmas is getting to me, George. And I'm just feeling so optimistic about life and just in general, just really positive about this taste test.
How was the Foster's last night? Still in your system?
Quite possibly. The stuffing, a clear winner. Yeah. Clear winner on this one is number one. It had all the traditional trappings of stuffing. Everything I'd expect, all of the right notes were singing at me. Number two was the clear loser. It was really buttery and strange alien tasting. It looks a bit alien. It doesn't really look like stuffing. It looks a little odd to me. I'm not sure. Not sure about
it. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Simon is still cracking on with the stuffing, so you've plenty of more time to extol the virtues of parsnips if you want, Lee. Simon is just digesting.
So.
Right, okay, Simon.
Okay.
This is exciting.
Let's talk sprouts.
Okay, let's talk sprouts. You're a big fan.
I can't stand Brussels sprouts. Mm. They're horrible.
However, the way I cook them are... No.
This is completely wasted on me. I really, genuinely...
Which ones do you hate less than the others?
I think that number one was the best one for me. And that might be because it was just the first bite of a sprout that I had to have.
Okay.
So I'm going to put number three as the worst.
All right.
Because by that point, I'd had to have three mouthfuls of sprout.
Fix.
Parsnip-wise, I like number one the best. Sweet, tasty, good texture to it. Mm-hmm. And number two, I would say, was my least favourite. No particular reason. I just thought that one and three were better.
Okay, that's good enough for me. And the stuffing.
A stuffing. Now, interesting one. So I went with number three because I thought it was quite nice and moist and had good herby flavour to it as the winner. But then I listened to Lee extol the virtues of number one and tucked back into it and tried to compare the two. And I think I'm going to stick with three as my favourite. Though I can definitely see the merits of number one.
Because I've written it in here and I don't want to ruin my thing.
This is radio or podcast gold, people.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to people talk about stuffing that you can't see. And number two was loser.
Okay, well, coming up, who doesn't like mince pies? Tough.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, giving you the chance every month to win up to £1 million tax-free.
Sticking with figures, talk about things we don't like. House prices. Well, according to estate agents, they were flat for the first time in nearly 5 years during the last 3 months. The latest Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors report found that London was dragging down the national average with a net balance of 54% of surveyors seeing prices fall rather than rise. Tax changes and concerns about Brexit being blamed. So Lee, this is your article. Mm-hmm. As Simon tucks into your particular favourite mince pies, don't worry, Lee, you're not off the hook, though. Explain to us what's going on here.
Well, do you know what? We've had three property reports this week, and they've all sort of shown something a little bit different, and I think it's getting people a bit confused. So the RICS survey, done of surveyors, and they say in the last 3 months whether house prices have fallen or risen in their area, and then they take a net, you know, respondents and say that's how many people are saying it's gone up or down. Now, it's on 0%. So very, very handy for last month. It's on 0%, so they've neither fallen or risen, and they're just totally flat. But actually, it's very much a regional thing, as it always is, and it's London that is now dragging down the rest of the property market quite significantly as well. That's a really quite chunky number of surveyors saying that prices are falling instead of rising in London. And of course, that starts to have a knock-on effect to, you know, places that are nearby, such as East Anglia and the South East. So they also have seen falls. So that's what the RICS are saying. And in the next 3 months, things aren't going to get much better. It's going to stay that way. Some of that is a bit seasonal as well. I mean, not many people really looking to buy, you know, this time of year now. Everything sort of grinds to a halt anyway. And then they're saying then within 12 months, prices will start going up again. So that RICS survey is pretty comprehensive. Thousands of estate agents that get involved with that. It's almost like a reflection on what's happening in certain areas of the country and how it's all performing. Now, we had two other stories this week. We had the official figures from the ONS saying that house prices are up 4.5% annually. So that's £10,000. So the typical home is now worth £10,000 more than a year ago, which shows that, you know, since Brexit and all the jitters that, you know, that surrounding that, prices are still kind of ticking upwards, not as fast as they were a couple of years ago, but they're still nudging higher, and that's the official stats. Then at the start of the week, we had the Rightmove figure. So,
yeah, explain how these two work together.
So ONS is sold prices, so actual looking at market prices of what has been sold, it's pretty robust data. The Rightmove one is, I'm not saying Rightmove one's not robust, but it's on asking prices rather than on sold prices. So it's what people are listing properties for. And as we know at the moment, properties aren't necessarily selling for what people are asking. So it's another measure to worth thinking about. But I think the Rightmove average house price is about £310,000 or something. I haven't got the figures right in front of me, but I know it's over £300,000. Whereas the ONS figures are saying that the average property price is £224,000. So that's quite a big gap. And then you can see why the Rightmove one might be more volatile. So it was saying that house asking prices were down £8,000 in a month. And again, it's quite seasonal as well, isn't it? I mean, of course, from mid-November to mid-December, I'm not surprised that asking prices have slipped back a little bit. And it also depends on where people are listing.
Simon, while Lee tucks into a mince pie, go for it, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to bear in mind that those Rightmove figures are the asking prices of newly listed homes. So homes that are listed in that period of time. And that is a monthly thing. And so it's the December figure, but it's the month to the 10th of December. So you've got to be thinking about who's going to list their home between the sort of 10th of November, 10th of December. It's not a great time to sell. Most people who are thinking of selling probably wouldn't try and sell then. So it's probably going to be people who have to move or have to try and sell now. And actually, if you're going to buy a home, November, December is a great time to try and do so if you want to try and get some money off. You will have less choice. However, you can negotiate pretty hard on the price, as shown by the fact that the average price of newly listed homes dropped £8,000 between those 2 months. And also, there's another thing to watch, which is auctions. If you want to buy a property at auction, a great time to buy is the December auctions. In the Savills auction, there was a flat sold in North London. I think it was around about the kind of Muswell Hill area, so not particularly central, but certainly not out towards the Shires and in the Sticks. One bedroom flat, but it was sold for less than £200,000. Wow. And you don't find many flats in London that you can buy for less than £200,000. So there's a lot of people, I think, go bargain hunting this time of year who were looking to make a bit of money off property. But as I said, you do get less choice, and you've got to remember that the people trying to sell now are probably not selling the best properties.
Indeed. Lee, you sound like you were enjoying your mince pie there, a bit of a coughing fit. I just want to ask you, as a result, though, of the homes becoming harder to sell in the southeast and London, we're seeing tens of thousands of homeowners becoming accidental landlords in the last year. Just explain that one, if you would.
So people are just choosing to hold on to their properties rather than actually sell it. Big part of that is lower rates of mortgages, so they can cover their payments by rent. But of course, there's a number of factors that you have to think about if you do become an accidental landlord and list your property, you know, to let, and you move somewhere else and hold on to the property. You have to tell your lender, of course, and that might put the rate up higher, or it's going to put the rate up higher because it's deemed as a bigger risk. But largely, people are doing it because at the moment, the property market's kind of gone a little bit stale, and it's become a little bit more difficult to sell a property at the moment. And what people are being told their house or home is worth might not necessarily be true, you know, so it's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And I think a lot of people are just deciding, you know what, I own a property in London, or I own a property in the southeast, I'm not in a rush to sell it, I may as well hang on to it and just buy something that's right for me now anyway, or might be moving in with a partner. That's quite a classic one. So someone might already, you both might be homeowners already, and then you just move into one, and then you let that out thinking, well, we'll keep on to that because it's quite nice to hold on to a property. So there's been a lot of that going on, and I do genuinely think it has been down to this year being a bit of a funny one for the property market. The sales seems to be grinding to a halt a little bit, and I just think there's a lot of people out there thinking their property's probably worth a lot more than actually what it genuinely is.
Certainly in those parts of London where we were talking about, you know, a year and a half ago, buyers queuing round the block for open days to go visit flats that were then basically told they had to put in sealed bids within the next 48 hours, bidding over the asking price. That has completely flipped around. I mean, I live in one of those bits of London. Flats near me, like a 500 grand flat, it's 50 grand cheaper than it was then. Maybe some of them are even 100 grand cheaper than they were then. You're seeing places that go on the market with really optimistic asking prices end up having that asking price cut by 100 grand. And what you've got is a phenomenon where people will get to a point living in London and then they might sell up and try and move out of London. Mm-hmm. And the markets that they're moving out of London to have, until the last couple of months, been reasonably buoyant because there was still enough money moving out of London to bid the prices up. But now you're starting to see the prices being cut in that commuter belt around London as well. But what's happened with some of these people moving out of London is they've gone, well, hang on a minute, I've put my house on the market, I'm not getting any offers that I want to accept, I'm going to need to raise another couple of £100,000 to buy that house outside of London that I want to buy, that's my forever home. I can't raise that much money at the moment. Let's just rent the place in London, where basically you've got a massively high rental value, and then we'll rent the place outside of town. Now, what's interesting is that you've seen this increase in this at a time when there's a crackdown on landlords, that it's actually become harder to do that. So if you did decide to keep hold of your property and buy another one, then you're going to incur a lot more stamp duty with a 3% surcharge. But I think a lot of people are renting one out and then renting another. But even if you rent one out now, you can't offset all of your mortgage interest against tax, which is going to really start eating into it. So for a lot of people, it's harder to make the numbers add up. So it's quite interesting that they're still deciding that they're going to do this. But there were some interesting stats in there that basically showed that these people normally only rent their property out for about one sort of tenancy worth, about a year, and then they decide that's it and they're going to sell it. Whereas buy-to-let landlords who are investing tend to hold on to their property for considerably more than a decade.
All right, we'll leave that there and we will go to the mince pies results. Please, Lee, if you would, what is your winner?
Well, as you know, Georgie, I don't eat mince pies. I don't particularly like them. But for the purposes of science, I've given it a good go. I've had a good munch on them. And actually, interestingly, my girlfriend said to me the other day, the Sainsbury's mince pies this year are the one. That's what she said to me. And she's a keen mince pie eater. She's saying they're the one. So
we'll find out.
I'm going to shoot myself in the foot here if I put this as the loser, Sainsbury's one. But I've gone for number two as the winner.
Number two.
And the notes I put down here is it was very wintry. It was a taste of the winter. It was very cinnamon-based. The pastry was nice. And it was good. And actually, there wasn't an awful lot between the three. I thought they were all pretty decent. But I've gone for number one as a loser, just as the pastry wasn't as quite as flaky and nice. But the fillings were all pretty similar, I thought.
Very interesting. So Simon?
My winner is number one. I thought the pastry was kind of fairly light, crisp.
Lee, you don't like them. No. So, I mean, you know, it's not a surprise.
And the stuff in the middle was nice.
Yeah.
And then my loser was number two. I'm not a great fan of mince pies, to be perfectly honest. I've always thought the great tragedy of mince pies is that they don't actually have proper mince meat in them, i.e. minced beef. And then that they are not the kind of pastry that you get with a sausage roll. So basically my main problem with mince pies is they're not a small pie.
Right, I can appreciate that,
Are
Simon.
You listening, mince pie board? Because there is a market to be tapped here.
Next year, lads, next
year. I think that my problem is it's not an empanada. If you ever had an empanada,
It is not. It's a festive, sweet mince pie. Okay, we're going to shift on to our cheese round. Please tell me someone actually likes cheese here.
Oh, yeah. Love cheese.
Okay, fantastic. Yes. We've got a round we actually enjoy. Okie dokie, so we've got on offer there cheddar, blue cheese, and some sort of fruit chutney. So while Lee cracks on there, all pun intended, Simon, you're going to answer a very unhappy reader's issue. Now, Ray, who's 78, had to fork out almost £1,145 after his Volvo was scrapped. This is all about paying insurance and why you still have to pay insurance, even if your car and after your car has been written off. Lee, you're looking very pleased with yourself there. Can you just tell us some of the flavours that are coming through?
You've picked some really nice, strong cheddars here, Georgie. These are nice.
My mum is a doctor and she always says, if you're going to eat a lump of fat, you may as well make it taste like something. So whenever I buy anything, it's got to be the most mature. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some good logic there from your mum. She's obviously a very smart lady. I do like a strong cheese. I'm not that keen on blue cheese, but I do like it, but out of them all. But these cheddars are very nice. I'm going to find it's hard to pick between the three. A loser, I think.
Okie dokie. Mm. Well, then we'll move over to Ray, who must feel like he's a bit of a loser.
Yes, you read this story, and I must admit that you think that is a shame about Ray. Basically, Ray had a Volvo. A 20-year-old Volvo that he had obviously been running for a considerable amount of time. He came down one morning and discovered that someone had hit his Volvo, left a massive dent running along the side, and they hadn't left a note. Charming behaviour. So he contacted his insurer, Post Office Money, who confirmed that the cost of repairing the 20-year-old car would be higher than its value. So he decided, OK, I'll give it up. He got a £100 payout from the Post Office for the write-off. Just £100 for his car. To me, that seems way too low. The scrap value of that car was probably more than £100. But He then also discovered that even though he no longer had a car and wouldn't be getting a new one, that he would have to keep paying insurance premiums of £109 a month until the following May. And he was told this was because he'd made a claim on the policy, which he'd taken out just a few days before, so it couldn't be cancelled, and he was making monthly payments. And so he got his £100 payout, and that would end up costing him £1,145. Now, what's going on here? Why are you paying for car insurance when you don't even have a car? Well, the reason is because when you take out car insurance, the standard way of doing it is you just pay the one-off cost all in one go. But a lot of people now pay monthly because insurance is expensive and you can spread it out. And insurers like to charge you for the privilege of doing so. Monthly premiums are considerably more expensive. But if you get your car written off in that time, you haven't paid all of your insurance cost. And it's all of your insurance cost that covers the cost of insuring your car, not just what you've paid up until that time. So if you were to have your car written off and you'd paid the whole thing up front, you wouldn't get a pro rata amount of the insurance back, sadly. So if you're paying it monthly and you get your car written off, then you've got to keep paying. But I must say that there's a number of things here with poor Ray, who lives in North London. So it might be that he's in an expensive car insurance postcode. I mean, I know that I am in North London. But to be paying more than £1,000 a year to insure a 20-year-old Volvo that someone writes off and gives you a £100 payout for, that's way too much money. You know, there's a number of lessons here. Firstly, it's that car insurers really don't pay you the value of what your car is worth when it's written off. I'm sure the post office would tell you that they gave him a fair price, but I've negotiated with a car insurer before when I had a car written off, and the price that they paid me was considerably below what I could have bought another car for. They go on this thing called book value. The book value is much lower than what you could actually buy the car for. It's meant to reflect what you could buy the car for, but actually, in almost all cases, you go on Auto Trader, you would not manage to find that same car, same condition, all those other things, for the same price. Secondly, I think Ray probably could have got cheaper insurance. I don't know whether he'd been a customer for many years and had been renewing it and the premiums had just been going up, or he hadn't shopped around. But also, I tell you what, if he wasn't doing many miles, he's got a 20-year-old Volvo. A 20-year-old Volvo qualifies for a classic car insurance policy, and classic car insurance policies limit the mileage that you can do, but they are much, much cheaper. So if you do have a car that is older and you don't do that many miles in it, go check out a classic car insurance policy for it, because whilst it might not be something that you would judge to be a classic, if it's more than 10 years old, an insurer probably would. And I mean, I think we need to, you know, go into what the post office had to say here, which is that firstly, after Moneymail got in contact, this was from our sister paper, it agreed to stop chasing Ray for the rest of his premiums. And a spokeswoman said, given the individual circumstances, including the low value of the claim and the short policy period, we have waived Mr. Henry's outstanding balance. That's Ray. We are very sorry for any confusion, worry or distress our customer has suffered. We are reviewing our correspondence in relation to this scenario to make it sure it is clearer for customers in the future. We'd like to apologise to Mr. Henry and are grateful to Moneymail for bringing this to our attention. So fair play to the post office. It did do the right thing after our colleagues on Moneymail got in touch. But I must admit, it, you know, Ray really does sound like he got stung here.
Lee, you're shaking your head there.
Well, actually, it's one of those things. I think you should find out what you're going to get if something happens in that scenario. So if you're saying, well, you're only going to get £100 for that car, and you know that in advance if there ever was going to be written off, and then your insurance is going to be more than £1,000, you'd have a good shop around and try and, you know...
Sorry, some of your insurance, of course, is covering you for the risk that you do damage to someone else.
Of course, yeah.
But it would ring alarm bells, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also, similar to Simon, we when we lived in London a couple of years ago, my girlfriend's car, which she had since it was brand new, it was about 12 years old. It only had about 30 or 40,000 miles on the clock. She'd driven it really well. It never fouled an MOT. And some Herbert broke into it because it was a bit old by that point, and they're quite easy to break into, the sort of older cars. Someone went on a joyride with it and crashed into a wall. So it was written off because they were saying, well, you know, to fix it, it's going to be more expensive than what the car's actually worth. Here's £600. And we looked on Auto Trader and looked at various websites and saw exactly the same car, same colour that my girlfriend had, and they were selling for, you know, almost £2,000. So I said, go back to them, you know, give this as an example. of what you're seeing online, similar mileage, you know, exactly the same model. And this is how much you're selling for. They then counter-offered, I think, about £1,200 before we finally settled, I think, on about £1,500. But an expert had told me to always accept the third offer when it comes to that kind of scenario. So they always start with a low price point insurers. You know, they're unscrupulous. They want to be making money out of people. So a lot of people will get that first offer and go, well, you know what, it was an old car, it sounds about reasonable. Well, it's not. Make sure you go and have a look around, see what cars of a similar mileage and exactly the same features yours is selling for. And if it's way more than what they're offering, then find out why and get more money.
Do indeed. Good advice there. All right then, talking of getting value for money, let's go on to our cheese round. Lots of cheese for you to eat. And yes, the prices were as you would expect, although again, Waitrose pulling back on their prices.
That's
very similar to Sainsbury's.
That's an interesting trend, that. There must be something going on there to... Well, maybe they're just happy to bring it down a bit.
Or Sainsbury's are going up.
Yeah, maybe a bit of both.
But either way, but very similar.
That's very
so the clear winner on price is Lidl, and then Sainsbury's Waitrose pretty much of a muchness. But is it in taste? So cheddar first, please. Lee, while Simon... don't know what you're doing there on the floor, Simon. Simon, there's plenty of cheese. You don't need to eat it off the floor. Leela?
I went for number one on the cheddar. I put in capital letters, love it.
Okay,
it had a very bold, deep flavour. Everything I'd want from a cheddar. Very, very nice. And actually, the three of them, Georgie, were very nice. It was difficult to choose, but I thought three was my loser. It had the least amount of flavour. And in the terms of the blue cheese, number two was my winner. It was quite creamy. It was very good balance to it. And it didn't do that. You know, sometimes with blue cheese, it makes you pull that face. You know, that kind of like face. You know, I can't describe it to people that are listening, but you screw your face up and it's...
like a sucked lemon.
Yeah, kind of so face. That's exactly what number one did. It had that kind of twang where it was just a bit too overpowering for me. And I probably wouldn't speak to anyone for the rest of the evening if I'd had a little bit of that. And in terms of chutney, the clear winner for me was number one. That was a proper chutney to me. I thought that was nice.
What were the flavours coming through in that, Lee?
Well, it was just... it's hard to describe, but it almost tasted like Christmas. It had everything I'd expect from a chutney, a Christmas chutney. It was very nice. Number two was my least favourite. I thought it was a little bit too tomato-y. Something I'd probably dip a tortilla chip into rather than have with cheese and biscuits.
All right, then. Simon.
Right, cheddar winner three. I thought it would taste nicely mature.
So the opposite of Lee. Interesting.
Yes. Loser one.
Okay.
Which I thought was a bit too mild for my liking. Blue cheese, winner two, which I thought had a good blue cheese, Stilton-y, ripe flavour to it. Loser number one, which actually my reason for making that the loser was reasonable taste, just a bit too creamy, a bit too buttery. Chutney-wise, I'm going to go winner number one. Good taste. And loser number two, which, yeah, looks a bit tomato saucy and doesn't taste tomato-y, but yeah, not so keen.
How very interesting. So we have come almost to the end of our taste test. Lee has a very special surprise for us. But before that, Lee, and I will tot up in my most mathematical way. There's a lot of scribbles on this sheet, and I'm not sure I understand them, if I'm totally honest. But if you are going to brave the supermarkets, we're being warned to watch out for 2 days in particular, unless you enjoy a good scrum in the aisles. Lee, what are expected to be the busiest supermarket shopping days in history, no
less?
That
sounds like the worst sport in history, doesn't it? The supermarket scrum.
The supermarket sweep. They should have a show about
it, shouldn't
they?
They should, yeah. You should pitch that. Basically, the 22nd and the 23rd of December, which is Friday and Saturday before Christmas. Christmas falls on a Monday this year for the first time since 2006. And what they're saying is that's almost like the perfect storm, the perfect shopping storm for people to go and do that supermarket shop because they want things to be as fresh as possible for that Monday. And they're saying that they expect, Kantar World Panel are saying they expect £1.5 billion to be spent on the in the supermarkets in those 2 days, making it the busiest shopping two-day period in supermarket history. So if you, on Friday or Saturday, get stuck in those aisles, you know who warned you.
Thank you very much for that, Lee. All right, then. Lee, do you have your special surprise?
I do.
Should we wait until the results come out? Would you like to know who's won?
I think we should have a winner. Let's have the winner, and then I'll wheel out my surprise.
Although we do actually have a bit of an issue with the worst Prosecco, because that's an even split, so the judge might have to decide there, and the best mince pies.
Okay, well, do you...
So if I could possibly try the worst Prosecco... 3 and 2.
Right,
this is number...
3.
Okay. Is there something floating in it?
Mm. Yeah, probably a bit of sprout.
3?
That's 3.
I don't like Prosecco. I'll be totally honest with you. Mm.
Well, Georgie, when it's Christmas, it should always be champagne. You know, it's that one time of the year when you should get those bubbles
with
out.
With meat mince pies.
I'd even choose a Carver over a Prosecco, if I'm being honest with you.
Oh, God. Sorry. They're both pretty rancid. But I'll probably say number 2.
Down it.
2 is the winner on the basis that, although I've got a bit of a funny taste in my throat now. So the loser for me there was the first one you gave
me. Yeah, which is number 3.
I can tell you that the loser for Prosecco was Waitrose. Simon, you and I both went for Waitrose. The clear winner was Lidl. Brussels sprouts, parsnip stuffing. I don't think there was any contest here. Although, Simon, I have to say, you did like Sainsbury's offering. Lee, you are a big fan of Lidl. Mm. You both do not like Waitrose. So the winner in that, and I've given points, is Lidl, the loser, Waitrose. Mm-hmm. On to the mince pie round. Another judge decides. So let's see what a hash I can make of this, because we don't know what the best mince pie is. You know that you are mediocre about Lidl. That came in the middle. However, Simon, you like the Waitrose. You do not like the Sainsbury's. Lee, well done. You can go back to your girlfriend and say you did actually decide that you like them. So you might want to talk about something while I eat stuff on air. So what is the one that I need to decide between? It is 1 Waitrose and 2 Sainsbury's. Mm. Right.
Boom. There's an interesting line of losers in my Waitrose line here. Mm. I'm thinking, I'm surprised by that. I would never have guessed.
I think this does go back into that whole thing about shopping at a variety of supermarkets. I personally don't pick one supermarket. I do about 3 or 4 different supermarkets, and I know what I like in each.
Do you still go to the supermarket?
Yeah.
Or do you do online shopping?
Oh, I don't do online shopping.
See, we get our shop online, and that basically means that we just get the same food from Tesco every single week.
Oh, you've got to mix it up, Simon. You've got to
try some
new things.
Well, I do, but then I go to the shop at the weekend, you see. Like, so if we're going to have something maybe on a Friday evening or a Saturday or a Sunday, I'll go at the weekend. But what that does mean is that I massively bump up our grocery bill, because there's the grocery bill that we think we incur every week, which is the one that is the online shop. And then there's the grocery bill that Simon incurs when he's wandering around the shops on a Saturday afternoon or Friday evening, spending money like it's going out of fashion.
Love it.
Always to the butchers. Yep, always to the butchers.
All right, chaps, the results are in. I have to say, Simon, I don't know what you're talking about. The Waitrose one tastes like there's meat in it. So that is out for me. Sainsbury's, I'm with your girlfriend and you on that one, Lee.
Nice.
Sainsbury's the winner there for the mince pies. I actually quite like mince pies as well. All right, the cheese round. I'm not going to partake in this because I don't need to. Actually, the winner here, I'll go chutney. The winner was clearly Waitrose. The loser was clearly the Sainsbury's offering, which you thought tastes tomatoey, although I think it's apple. But either way.
Apple?
Some such thing. Or pear and something. Waitrose was actually some rhubarb offering. Mm. Cheddar, the winner for Simon was Waitrose, the loser was Lidl. For Lee, the winner was Lidl, the loser was Waitrose. I'm allergic to cheese, so I will leave that one out.
It's a score draw.
Absolutely. I'll say the winner there was Sainsbury's because you both thought it was mediocre. And the blue cheese round, the winner, clearly Lidl, the loser, clearly Sainsbury's. Now, I have given 5 points to the winners.
Rewind. What about the parsnips and the stuffing? We had that.
I think we have. I gave that as a main course round. All right, then.
You did it as an overall.
All right, I'll go into more detail.
Oh, sorry.
For the Brussels sprouts, shall I just do a rundown of them all?
Yeah, let's do a rundown.
I'm going to do a rundown
of them. All right. Like, voice.
I'm going to do a rundown of them all. Prosecco. The winner here was Lidl. Also, Lee went for Lidl. Brussels sprouts. The winner, clearly Lidl for both of you. The loser, Waitrose. For parsnips, Simon liked Sainsbury's. Lee, however, liked Waitrose. You both did not like Lidl. So that is the loser there. Stuffing. This is a very interesting one. Now, the one that you got offered from Waitrose was actually the one in a packet. The one that you get in the fridge, and that's quite expensive. So it's £2.69. The other ones are in the cardboard boxes, where actually if you work out how many balls you get, it's 9p for stuffing for three balls at Lidl, 11p at Sainsbury's, £2.69 at Waitrose. Mm. However, you did not like the Waitrose at all. No, Simon, you went for Sainsbury's. Lee, you went for Lidl. I've actually tried them, and I preferred Sainsbury's again.
You can tell what we've discovered there is that none of us like the actual food. We like the thing that comes in a box.
We like the stuff right. You stick hot water into and right. Mix it all up. Love okay, it.
So keep
the winner
it classy.
There was Sainsbury's. The mince pies, the winner, Sainsbury's. Loser was between Sainsbury's and Waitrose, but as I've made Sainsbury's the winner, loser was Waitrose. For the cheddar, Simon, you went for Waitrose as the winner. The loser was Lidl. Lee, you went completely the other way round, so I'm making Sainsbury's the winner. If you notice, I've made Sainsbury's the winner in all of these, is where I shop. There are other supermarkets available, though not where I live. Blue cheese. Simon, you went for Lidl. Lee, you went for Lidl. You both didn't like Sainsbury's. Clear winner there. Chutney, clear winner is Waitrose. And the loser is Sainsbury's. So oh, I yeah. have tried to add points to all these. I can tell you, the winner by a country mile in this taste test, except for chutney, is Lidl.
Wow.
Congratulations to Lidl. I did my best, Sainsbury's. I'm really sorry I couldn't get you into the top one. So Lidl, yes, Sainsbury's in the middle and Waitrose the clear loser. And if we take a look at some of the prices, and I haven't just thrown this together because I've worked out the price with Prosecco, with a Prosecco discount, because let's be honest, can you actually buy Prosecco without a discount? You can in Lidl because they didn't have one with a discount. And I've done it if you want to go teetotal at Christmas. So if you want to go teetotal, because I just think that's easy, £4.22 for your bits and pieces at Lidl, £8.42 from Sainsbury's, £11.67 for our clear loser, Waitrose. Your thoughts on those, gentlemen?
Well, you can get three times your Christmas dinner if you go to Lidl, so you could just have three times the amount for the same price. I think, you know, that's pretty pretty decent.
I'd say for things like Brussels sprouts and parsnips, which are 29p.
It's incredible prices.
Right. The difference, you wouldn't notice it, and actually you guys preferred it. So.
And also, and a lot of things like that, especially like Brussels sprouts and parsnips, you can kind of pimp them up a little bit from store cupboard ingredients and give your Christmas a bit of a kick, and you kind of have to create the flavour in some of those sort of things anyway. So if you go for the cheaper option, you know, a bit of honey on the parsnips, a bit of pepper on the sprouts, you know, it makes it take a bit of butter. You know, a bit of bacon lard on, it's lovely.
I can just say I'm having a little mince pie. Pastry's a bit flaky, but actually, I'd say that's all right. Simon, your thoughts?
Well done, Lidl, is all I can say, really. I should probably start trying to shop at Lidl. But the one near me doesn't have a car park, and there's no point going to Lidl unless you can cart a load of stuff home. So that's why I don't. But I should probably go down there, because it seems like it's doing some pretty good stuff.
Yes, and we should have a shout-out to Rich Browning, who every year, sadly can't be here with us today, moans about the parking at Aldi and Lidl. So this one's for
bah
you,
humbug.
Rich. This one's for you. So the winner then is Lidl. The loser is Waitrose. There are other supermarkets and more official scientific taste tests available. Lee, because you haven't eaten enough, has got a special surprise for us.
I have
us.
A special surprise for the both of you. Now, I know Simon pretty well, and I know he loves his crisps. And actually, I have more of a savoury tooth than a sweet tooth, so I probably eat more crisps at Christmas than chocolates and all that sort of stuff. So, what I want you to do is you've got to guess the flavour of these four crisps.
I'm going to turn down my mic just because it's going to sound absolutely awful.
Well, I thought the crunch might make good radio.
Okay, well, I'll do one, and then, Lee, you're going to have to explain to us.
We could pretend it's someone walking up a gravel path.
So, what seasonal delight do you think that might be?
So, it's going to be a seasonal
stuffing.
Flavor.
Chicken and stuffing.
Ooh, that's a good shout.
Turkey and stuffing.
Pigs in blankets?
No, it is turkey feast. So it's stuffing and cranberry notes.
Yes.
And on the packet, it's from M&S. On the packet it says, don't worry, haven't included the sprouts. And they are 88...
Are they parsnip crisps as well?
Yeah, there's some potato and some parsnip crisps in there. Ooh. It's like a root vegetable sort of mix.
Posh.
88p for a small bag they are, so they're not cheap, but, you know, good stuff. Right,
M&S.
We're going for B now.
Mm-hmm. It's a good crunch there, Simon. It's a good... Oh, I've just taken an absolute ton of them. There we go. Okay. And for the crunch. Good crumb.
So what are you thinking on B?
There's a ham in there. Definitely a hammy flavour.
Mm.
Or pigs in blanket actually might not be a bad shout.
I think... Maybe, yeah, I agree with the kind of ham element. Maybe a roast ham, and there's no mustard there. So again, it's going to be a something and something, isn't it? Because they can't do festive crisps that aren't a something and something. It's not just one flavour. Yeah, so I'm not... Roast ham and honey? No.
There's a bit of sage in there. Or something, or maybe that's from the last one. No, I'll go for pigs and blankets.
Yeah, it's pigs and blankets, oh, actually. Yeah, from Aldi, the Lidl rival. They're 69p for a 200-gram bag, which is just a ridiculous price. Anyway, we're now on to C.
These crisps are pink.
These are interesting, yeah. They're sort of like...
Christmassy
colour. Okay, that's a nice crunch there.
Oh, my word.
What the heck is that?
It's sweet.
There's some real miff looks around the studio for these ones.
Oh my!
Christmas cake flavour.
No, I'm going to need to try another one. Can I try another one?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm thinking there's sort of like apple flavours in this.
Christmas cake flavour crisps.
Okay, oh, I'm guessing I've got that wrong.
I wouldn't do that to you,
Simon. This is going to be a Prosecco one. A Prosecco, there's like yeah, some sort of Prosecco flavour crisp. Prosecco and...
You're correct going down the booze front.
Yeah, this...
Ooh. Brandy and...
No, there's something...
Brandy butter flavour.
This is... I want to say cider, it's not. It's like a balsamic-y, vinegary flavour. There's champagne. No. What is it?
It's Bloody Mary crisps. Oh. For the colour might give away. They're from M&S. £2 for a 150-gram bag. And they I've got hints of tomato sauce, Worcester sauce, and vodka, allegedly. Right.
Now yeah, I can taste it now you say that. I can say, yeah.
We've got our last ones here.
Ooh, these have got some green bits in them.
In fact, I'm swilling it down with some Prosecco here. Okay, right, good crunch there. Oh, no.
Bit flat.
What are the notes you're getting from these ones?
They're really soft. Ooh. Something in chestnut.
Stuffing flavour.
There's a chestnut in there.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I was a little bit cruel. These were just some cheap plain crisps that I found knocking around in my cupboard. And I stewed them overnight with some sprouts. And then I flaked a little bit of parsley on them to make them look a little bit sort of more pimped up and Christmassy. They're made by Boyce & Co. just in my kitchen.
You are kidding. That is immense if that's true.
It's true.
That is awesome. Brussels, honestly.
Don't give up the day job, Lee. Don't give up the day job.
I think they might have been a little bit stout.
They're quite nutty. Yeah, that might be it then. you did say the little Brussels sprouts taste a little bit nutty.
There you go.
You might have really got something there. I don't think that so there.
I think if you ever go on The Apprentice, you found your winning task there.
Editor Simon Lambert, Consumer Affairs Editor Lee Boyce, thank you very much. A very Merry Christmas to you. A very Merry Christmas to everybody listening. We will have a special podcast next week for This Is Money. A very special podcast, so do stay tuned for that. But have a moment to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all our listeners, and I hope you have a very prosperous 2018.
Merry Christmas.
Indeed. Merry Christmas. And don't forget, go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app to stay up to date with the very latest. And if you enjoy our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes and tell your friends and family.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.